You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of betting.
Hello and welcome along to the William Hill Snooker Podcast. We're taking a look ahead to the 2015 World Championships from the Crucible. Sam Norris here joining you on the podcast, and alongside me is Ian McCullough to take a look at some of the outright betting and some selected first round games. How are you, Ian? You good?
Yeah, great. So how are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad, thank you. Looking forward to this. Mm-hmm. And last time you were here, we were previewing the, well, not me and you, but you were previewing the shootout. It's a bit of a different tournament, isn't it, this one?
Slightly, yeah. The shootout's obviously one frame, and this is the 17-day marathon of the mind. This is the one that everybody wants to win. From my point of view, it's the tournament that gets you the most recognition as a player. If you do well in the World Championships, as luckily I did, it does get you a lot of recognition. You know, people tend to remember this more than any other tournament simply because of the reach of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it all kicks off on the 18th of April. What sort of player do you look for when you're trying to pick an outright winner for this?
For me, there's seldom been a player won the World Championships that you'd class as an out-and-out potter, you know, which could possibly explain maybe why Jimmy White never won it, because Jimmy, you know, wasn't prepared to compromise as much as maybe what he should have done in messy situations. He pushed the boat out a little bit too much, and that maybe that's why, you know, obviously Davis won 6 world titles. You know, Hendry probably doesn't get the credit he deserves as being a tactical player. Ronnie's won 5. Ronnie's arguably the best tactician we've got in the game. Higgins has won 4 world titles. And you've got, you know, all the great match players like, you know, Mark Selby, defending champion, Neil Robertson. What I'd be looking for, I'd be looking for somebody over 17 days and whatever number of sessions it works out. I think it's something like 16 or 17 sessions. You're not going to play well every session. So you're looking for somebody who, when he goes a few frames behind, isn't going to let his head drop. When he's not playing well, isn't going to let his head drop. And he's going to fight regardless of the scoreline. You know, and obviously in that bracket, you've got players like, you know, Selby, who's the defending champion, current world number one. Robertson's, that's one of Robertson's great attributes now. He's a great match player. John Higgins, even down at number 13 in the world rankings now. All players who've got great Crucible experience, and they don't give up when it gets tough.
Yeah, very true that. We'll take a quick look at some of the market principles for this tournament then. Ronnie O'Sullivan, as you expect, is the favourite at 9-4. Judd Trump, 6-1. Same price, Neil Robertson. Mark Selby, defending champion, of course, is 8-1. 11-1, Sean Murphy. 14, Sting Junhui. 28 bar those. I know you've been keen in the past, Ian, to take on Ronnie O'Sullivan when he's priced to put this sort of short price. Is that the case again?
I'll take him on again, absolutely. And I'll tell you for why. He's actually, as it stands, he's top of the seasonal win rates percentage-wise for all the players in the top 16. Now, anybody who's been the top of that win rate going into the World Championships for the last 5 years since the PTC events evolved and the whole tour changed has crashed out early at the Crucible. Mm. Ding Junhui last year to Michael Worsley. The year before, Robert Milkins. Sorry, when Neil Robertson was defending champion, he lost to Robert Milkins. So it's not a good omen to have over your head coming into the event. I think he's far too short. Ronnie, if you look at Ronnie's season he's had, everybody just thinks Ronnie wins and wins and wins. He's lost 3 major finals this year, Ronnie, and he's had chances to win them. What happens as you get older, he's 40 this year, is Ronnie, as you get older, it just gets harder to win. And he's this great flamboyant player, great all-round match player, but as you get older, it just gets harder. That's the top and bottom of it. You know, he's working with a psychologist. His mind's in a good place, but at 9-4, it's a short price to sweat on for 17 days.
Okay, and would you be looking to take him on with one of the other market principals? Obviously, we've got Trump, Robertson, and Selby. Mark Selby, though, defending champion. No first time winner has retained the title since 1977, since he moved to the Crucible.
Absolutely, the curse of the Crucible. But all these fat stats are there to be beaten. And yeah, I actually think that Selby could do it. He's quite a low-key sort of person, is Mark, anyhow. You'll not meet a nicer lad. You know he's prepared. And in a way, it could have done him a favour. He's only won a PTC event this season, until China 2 weeks ago. And people are saying, well, nobody's ever won China and then gone on and won the Crucible. The reason that nobody's ever won the Crucible after winning China is because inevitably they've been involved in long Titanic seasons, the back end of every tournament. Selby hasn't. I think Selby's coming into this fresh. He's not unaccustomed to defending titles. He's won the Masters three times. He's won a lot of other major events. He's won the UK. I think Selby is a little bit off the radar and a little bit overpriced. And I've said this for years. Because of the style that Selby plays, he's quite methodical. He's very tactically based. Those sort of players, the traders don't give them the respect they deserve. Your players like your Judd Trumps and your Ronnie O'Sullivans, the traders think they're the be-all and end-all, and they're always too short a price. I think Selby has got a real genuine chance of winning this again.
Okay, very interesting. We're at half the odds, of course, plays one and two, so if he gets to the final, is there anyone appealing at maybe a bigger price for you, Ian?
You've obviously got your usual players in the mix. You know, your Neil Robertson's always a threat. I think Neil's in a fantastic section. I'd be highly surprised if Neil didn't make at least the quarterfinals. He has got a tricky opening round in Jamie Jones, but he leads 4-0 on the head-to-head. So, you'd like to think he'd get through on that. His Crucible experience is far superior to Jamie Jones, who was a quarterfinalist about 3 or 4 years ago. Sean Murphy, it's 10 years since Murphy last won his first world title in 2005. I actually think, I'm not saying Murphy's not going to win it, but I think Murphy, when he's under pressure, tends to push the boat out a little bit too much. And rather than think his way out of situations, he pots his way out of situations, which is great if they're going in, as he did in the Masters, when he beat Robertson 10-2 in the final. But he's got to accept the consequences when them big shots aren't going in. And I think that's what maybe holds Murphy back winning his second world title. You know, further down the pecking order, you've got somebody like John Higgins, you know, four times champion, who's been massively off the radar for the last couple of years, was close to dropping out the top 16, but he's turned it around. He won the Welsh Open in January. A lot of people said John would never win another major, and he won the Welsh Open in January or February, and he looks like he's just finding a bit of form at the right time. And he's the sort of player, again, who probably doesn't get the respect he deserves because he plays the percentages very, very well. He's got Robert Milkins' first match, who I expect him to get past. And you never know if you back, you back John, he beats Milkins, one or two of the big names above him go out, and John's price will get slashed, won't it?
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. He's 28-1 at the moment, John Higgins. Yeah, it is, certainly. We'll move on then to take a look at some of the selected first round ties. We'll start with the defending champion, Mark Selby. He's 1-7 against debutant Kurt Mafflin at 9-2. The way it's priced up, it looks like a formality, but it's not the easiest game in the world for Mark Selby.
This is no formality. I've known Kurt Mafflin since he was a kid. And Kurt Mafflin is one of the few players who will go there first time and not be intimidated. Mm. He's very mentally strong. He's a big unit, is Kurt, as well. He's about 6'2", and he's about 16 stone. Great potter of a ball. And in reality, he's underachieved so far in his career. Bags of ability. He had a great win, two great wins in qualifying. He beat Steve Davis 10-1, who'd just beaten Jamie Cope the round before. And to get through was 6-3 down to Fergal O'Brien. And Fergal doesn't make it easy for him. He came through and won 10-9, which shows you know he's tenacious. Made a good clearance in the decider as well, by all accounts. Kurt, very, very good player, scores very, very heavily. It's 1-1 on the head-to-heads. The biggest deciding factor here is it's going to be Kurt's first time there. As I said, I don't think he'll be intimidated by the arena, but it does take your time to settle once you get in there. He's up against a great match player, obviously, in Selby, defending champion, who won't want to give his title up, you know, easily. You know, he knows what it's about there, and Selby should possess too much firepower for him. Maybe he might not score him off the table, but he should have too much table craft for him. And I think Kurt will have to play somewhere near his best, and I think Selby will have to play 50% or below to lose this game. To be honest, if Kurt won, I'd be delighted for him because I think he's a great lad, I really do. And he's good enough to win it. But it just experience could be the key. And I'd expect Selby to come through. He won't have it all his own way. It won't be like a 10-1 or a 10-2. Or I don't think it'll be a 10-1 or a 10-2. It could quite easily be that. I think more of a 10-5, possibly 10-6. And all the press and all the journalists will be going, well, Selby, you weren't impressive there. Yeah. Instead of just looking well, doesn't matter how you get through. And that's what Selby's very, very good at.
Okay, fair enough. Would the match result on both players to win five or more frames then appeal to you? Mark Selby, 4-6 there, which is a big jump from the 1-7.
That is something I could definitely play. Kurt Mafflin's what you'd call a streak player. He's the sort of lad, he's phenomenally heavy scorer in the balls, and he can quite easily reel off three or four frames on the trot. It's all about confidence with players like Kurt. If he gets off to a good start, he'll only get stronger. And I think Selby will want to get both hands around his throat and start squeezing from the off and use his experience and his greater match play. But no, I think that is a market 4-7 Selby and both players over five frames. I think it's something they could definitely play.
Okay, fair enough then. Yeah, that's the Mark Selby Kurt Mafflin game. Then we'll move on to one of the ties of the round for me, Ian. Mark Williams taking on Matthew Stevens in the All Welsh affair. 3-10 for Mark Williams. Matthew Stevens is 5-2. As I mentioned there, this looks one of the best games of the round for me.
I actually think 3-10 on Williams is a pretty good price, to be honest. It's a rerun of the final from 15 years ago. God, that makes me feel old. In 2000, where Mark obviously beat Matthew, there was a spell where Matthew never won a world title, but he was the most consistent player to play at the Crucible. Matthew Stevens, great, great player in his time, struggling a little bit these days. He's out the top 32 players in the world. He's down at number 35. And Williams, on the flip side, has turned it around somewhat. You know, he was looking like his career was heading on a downward spiral, and he's turned that around massively. And since Christmas, he's been really, really consistent. You know, he isn't going to worry about playing at the Crucible. He's won the title twice in 2000, 2003, 2004, something like that. He leads slightly on the head-to-heads, which is at 12-9, which is not uncommon. You get close head-to-heads when you get friends playing. The form book goes out the window. But I don't think Matthew is in enough form to win this game, really. He has flattered to deceive a lot over the last couple of years, Matthew. He's a great lad, and he's been a great player. Sadly, at the moment, he isn't that great player. And I think Williams had come through. I wouldn't like to get involved on a scoreline bet because I could see it being 10-2 as much as I could see it being 10-9. If I had a gun at my head, I'd say Williams 10-5.
Okay, then Williams 10-5 in that encounter is 13-2. And again, you could play the match result on both players to win five more frames. That's 8-13 for Williams' favour. We'll move on then to take a look at the Neil Robertson game. Neil Robertson is 1-8. Comes up against Jamie Jones, who is 5-1. And again, this is one where you've got Robertson 8s on, but it's not the easiest of assignments.
No, it's not. Jamie Jones is a player who's a bit of a forgotten man, really. It's only 3 years ago he came here as I mean, I've known Jamie since he was a kid. Great player, underrated player as well, and a lower ranked player than what he's down at number 40 in the world. At one point 3 years ago, he was up at about number 15 or 16 and looking like he was going to get his place in the top 16. But he did what a lot of players do. He got to the Crucible, he beat Sean Murphy, and he ended up losing in the quarterfinals. And instead of thinking, well, I must be doing something right to achieve this, he started changing things, thinking, what have I got to do to get in the top 16? And the wheels fell off somewhat. But he looks like he's turning that around a little bit. He had a tricky winning qualifying. He beat Adam Duffy 10-8 to get through. To be honest, I expected him to put Duffy to bed a bit easier than that. But it doesn't matter what score you win, as long as you win. And he's got there. I say he's not the sort of player who'll shy away from winning there. He's a confident lad anyway. He's won there before, so he knows what it's about. But it's the animal he's up against. He's up against Neil Robertson, great player, down to, it sounds terrible, that, down to number four in the world, yeah, doesn't it? But I don't think that shows that Neil Robertson's had a bad season, because he hasn't. He won the Wuxi Classic in the early part of the season, also won a PTC event in Poland recently, and as all the top four or five players, he's been at the back end of most tournaments, semis, finals, quarter finals, last 16s. He leads 4-0 on the head-to-heads. That could be crucial. You know, that's a nice, when you're going into a match against somebody and you're 4-0 up on the head-to-heads, you're starting to get to that borderline where it's, I've beaten him a few times, to, I don't think I can lose to him. And it's going to be a big ask. I think Jamie Jones needs to get out the blocks very quick in this match. Robertson surprised me a little bit, to be honest. I didn't think Neil would have turned into the player he has done, but he's a phenomenal match player now. He used to be very, very open, very, very loose. Now he's matched snooker game, he's watertight, makes it very, very difficult, doesn't make many mistakes, and you've got to, the few mistakes that he does make, you've got to pounce on, as well as creating your own chances. I'd expect Robertson to come through, to be honest. It depends, this game depends on how Jamie plays, to what the scoreline is, as opposed to what Robertson plays. I think Robertson can play 60% in this match and still squeeze through. You know, I wouldn't write Jamie Jones off completely. You know, I don't expect it to be a rout. I don't think it'll be a 10-1 or a 10-2. Again, I'd probably go around the 10-5, 10-6, 10-7 mark to Robertson.
Okay, Robertson to win the game and both players to score five more frames is 8-13 in this. And if you wanted to Dutch your stakes on any selections there, it's 11-2 for the 10-5 and 6-1 for the 10-6. We'll preview one more game then on the podcast. And this is one of those that's a little bit closer in the outright market. It's got a lot of short price favourites. And we do have an odds on favourite here, but it's closer than some of the matches. It's Ding Junhui taking on Mark Davis. 2-5, Ding Junhui, 2-1. For Mark Davis. You mentioned earlier, crashed out in the first round last year, Ding Junhui. It hasn't been the greatest of 12 months for him, really.
No, but it could work in his favour. 12 months ago, Ding Junhui was going into the Crucible, and everybody was saying he's going to win this and he's going to win that. He'd had an amazing season. He'd won five major ranking events. It was the first time anybody had done it since Stephen Hendry in the 1991 season. That shows what an achievement he'd done. And as I said earlier, he was top of the seasonal win rates by an absolute country mile. He'd won about 3,000,000% of his matches. It was phenomenal, the season he'd had. And he got to the Crucible and he burnt out. Mm. And he lost 10-9 to Michael Worsley. Everybody went, "Whoa, what a great performance from Worsley." It wasn't. It was a poor performance from Ding. He was getting in the balls and making 20 breaks, where all season he'd been making 120 breaks. Different animal this year. He's had a really quiet season. He's had a couple of horrendous results, you know. Probably the low point was losing 6-5 to James Cahill in the UK, which, to be honest, you know, in Ding's, with nothing disrespectful to James Cahill, but Ding shouldn't be losing to players like James, especially on the big stage. And the wheels fell off somewhat for 2 or 3 months. Great players don't dwell on it. Eventually, they turn that corner. And he turned that corner for me last week in China, a couple of weeks ago in China. He lost in the quarterfinals to Gary Wilson, which looks like a bad result, but Gary Wilson ended up losing the final. Gary Wilson played very, very well. But Ding just gave me that little bit of a sign that he's turning a corner a little bit. He's actually a good each-way bet for me to win the tournament. He is a great, great player. If he gets to his opening round, which I expect him to against Mark Davis, I think he could get stronger and stronger and stronger, because he ain't going to suffer from burnout because he's hardly won a match all season.
Sure.
He's going there a little bit sort of like, well, I haven't got a lot to lose. You know, nobody expects me to do well. Joe Public doesn't expect him to do well. But the lads in the know will have one eye on Ding and think he could go far in this. Mark Davis, very, very, very capable player, world number 18, and he's been around that 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 mark for about 3 or 4 seasons now, and he can't quite cement his place in the top 16. He's been to semis of the UK a couple of times. He doesn't win enough for me, Mark, in front of the big cameras on the big stage like this event. He wins, but not enough. And I think what shows there, this is his 10th time at the Crucible. He's only won his opening match 3 times. So he's lost it 7 times, which is not a good strike rate. Ding, on the other hand, this will be his 9th appearance, and he's only lost it 3 times. And one of them was last year when he suffered from burnout. I would be really, really surprised. I actually think Ding Junhui is the better the first round to win this match.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. And 2-5 actually does look quite a good price.
I wouldn't get involved in a handicap because Mark Davis can play. Yeah. Mark Davis beat Ken Doherty to qualify, beating 10-2 or 10-3. You know, but he just, for me, great lad is Mark, known him years. He just doesn't do enough on that big stage for me consistently enough. And we all know what Ding's like. If he finds if he's got his scoring boots on, he's got the best white ball position in the game. He's 18 inches behind every next ball he's taking on, and that's why he scores so heavily. And if he gets into that groove where he's just going 100, 70, 80, 70, 100, Mark Davis can't compete with that. Great player Mark Davis is, he can't compete with Ding if Ding starts scoring.
Okay, fantastic stuff. And there we are, the thoughts of Ian McCulloch ahead of those selected first round matches. Just before we wrap up then, your main tournament tip for the Worlds?
I think Mark Selby is under the radar a little bit, and I think he's a great bet. And an each-way bet, I'd have Ding Junhui. And as an outside bet, I'd have a small each-way bet on Ricky Walden.
Okay, 8-1 Mark Selby, Ding Junhui 14-1, and Ricky Walden is 55-0-1. You with us on in play for the duration of the Worlds?
I'll be here for the duration of the 17 days. I'm becoming a son of Leeds for the next 17 days. I'm an adopted Yorkshireman for the next 2.5 weeks.
Excellent stuff. And there we are. I can hear Ian on In Play Radio throughout the duration of the World Championship. Really looking forward to that. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today, Ian, and hope you enjoy the Crucible action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.